Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's conference at Prevent Connect Web Conference. As a reminder, today's call is being recorded. For opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the conference over to your host, Mr. David Lee. Please go ahead, sir.
Great, and welcome, everyone. It's great to see people from all around the country, from the high of 109 degrees in Texas, down to perhaps here in the Bay Area being the coolest, being in the low 60s. It's great to see so many people joining us for today's web conference, from girls to women, countering limited roles for women through norms change. And so we are pleasure to be able to see so many of you here. This is a real exciting discussion, and I'm really pleased to have our guests joining us today. Prevent Connect is a project that is an online community to be able to advance the prevention of violence against women, particularly sexual violence and sexual and domestic violence, and that we provide a wide variety of activities. Right now you're in one of our web conferences. We also have reading clubs that are smaller web conferences where we take recent articles published in the literature and have practitioners discuss the implications for prevention. We also have a prevention wiki. We have prevention podcasts and e-learning units, and you can get all of that on our website, which is at preventconnect.org. I do encourage you to follow the Pulse of Prevention on Twitter for those of you who tweet, and it's a great way to be able to have a fabulous discussion in 140 characters or less about prevention. So please do that. Prevention Institute, also is on there, and many of us, and I know that Hardy Girls and Healthy Women is also on Twitter, so great opportunities. We have a blog where we blog about prevention, and so I've been writing a lot. I just went to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence Conference and blogged about that. Friend us on Facebook, and if you're old school and want to go to our email group or listserv, we have over 1,100 prevention practitioners who participate in this work. So I do encourage you to follow us, and our contact information is on the page. Myself and Chad Sniffen are your primary contacts at Prevent Connect. A little bit about how to use this technology, just so you're all going to be familiar with it. You can see a screen that looks on this. If you look above my head, a little bit on the right-hand side of my head, there's a little hand graphic. Sort of, I'll draw a little circle of where it sort of is up here. And if you can, everyone, just raise your hand. Let's have everyone practice raising your hand. Go ahead. I see people are starting to come in and raise their hand. I've got 20 people, 23, 29. I can just see I get the totals. So please raise your hand up to 41. Oh, some people undid it. We got a few more people. Raise your hand. And when your hand raises, you always see a little cross through it to know that it's up, because that's how you can lower it. And I still see half of you have not raised your hand yet. Raising the hand is a way that we, if you want to ask questions, then you can go ahead and raise the hand, and we can be able to unmute your phone. Many of you are getting, I'm going to lower your hands right now because we don't need the hands up there, but thank you for all doing that. I've just lowered all of your hands, and it's great to see so many people. Many of you I know I can see on here. Many of you are connecting on the computer and listening through, having my voice come through the computer. If you're doing that and you want to ask a question in person, you can't do that on your computer, but you can always dial us, call the phone number that appears in the top bar and the passcode and join, and that way you can ask a question of us, and we want to encourage people's voices to be heard during this conversation. We also have questions and answers, and so I'm going to ask a couple questions of the group just so we can see what who's in the room today, so we can learn a little bit about who's in our audience. My voice is garbled. I hope that sounds clearer. If you're doing it on the computer, sometimes if you have a bandwidth problem, then you will find that if you're doing it up listening on the computer, it might mean that you have a slow connection, so you might want to go ahead and call in. For better sound, I'm now typing this. For better sound, please call in at the phone number, which is 1-866-237-3252, and the passcode is
970-934
pound. So I'm going to do that so people can hear better. Some of you can hear fine. So I'm now going to ask the question of the audience. Can you tell us What best describes your organization? Are you with a domestic violence agency or coalition, a sexual assault agency or coalition, a dual one, dual sexual assault agency or coalition? Are you with, and go ahead and just click on the little circle, the one that makes sense. Are you with a local, state, or health public health association? Are you with a community-based organization? Are you with education, K through 12, or education, college or university, or other? So go ahead and vote. I see that we've got quite a few of you voted, but not everyone yet. I'm going to share the results with you just so you can see who's in the audience. And you'll see that we've got about 12% domestic violence organizations. It appears it hasn't shown up yet, but I am trying to. About 16% sexual assault, about 24% dual, 7% local or state or national public health, 8% community health organizations. Oh, it appeared for a second, and then it disappeared. Now it's come back. And 2% education, 7% higher education, and 3% other. And some of you didn't see polls. I apologize for that. Some of you don't do that. Let me withdraw that question because I want to pose another question to get a sense of how familiar you are with Prevent Connect. And so I want to know if you have attended a web conference before. And so if you have attended a, and so that should be appearing. It's, so this is your first time, so no, it's the first time I've attended a web conference. You've attended previous web conference, but this is your first Prevent Connect one. Do the next one. You've attended one previous, or actually I should have said two, one or two previous Prevent Connect conferences, press the third one. And if you've gone to three or more or go to a lot of our web conferences, click 19. If you attended two web conferences, pick between the third or fourth one. I typed it wrong.
Unforgivable.
Well, I'll share the results. I can see a few of you haven't voted, but indeed 22% of you is the first time you've ever been on a web conference. So welcome.
Oh, welcome.
And another 25% of you, this is your first time to be at a Prevent Connect web conference. So half of you is new to Prevent Connect. Welcome. I really encourage you to be able to participate fully. And there's 20% of you have gone to three or more and keep on coming back. So thank you so much. So it's great to see we have a large new audience here today. So that's great. I'm going to remove your polling questions now and go over. And we will have a text chat. I see you've already learned how to write in the text chat, so we're not going to talk about that. You want to make it a little easier to read the text chat because our audience loves talking in text chat. The way you can make it bigger is what we call undocking. And what you do is in the upper right-hand corner of your chat box, I put a little circle there on your screen. If you click on that, it will expand your box and make it much easier to read. So that's something that I find very helpful. It makes the slide a little slower. And that we also have our slides available that you're seeing here. They're also available on our website, and I'm just sending you the address now of where you can find those slides. It will also be in the email at the end of the session. We'll also link you to those slides, copy of those slides. This is part of a series that we've been doing at Prevent Connect this year to talk about norms change, because we know to do the primary prevention of sexual violence and domestic violence, it requires changing the norms in our communities. And so we have done a series of web conferences. We do have recordings of our other sessions. So we had a session previously that was on violence is everywhere, talking about the culture, how to be able to counter the culture. We also talked about growing boys into men in a way to counter some of the dominant forms of masculinity. We actually have been reframing it away from traditional. Mm-hmm. Today's session is around from girls to women. And that the next sessions that will be coming up soon will be under control, and we'll be opening this one very soon, talking about how to counter the value placed on power and control. And then we're also going to talk about my business and how to counter secrecy and privacy, and that will be in September. So I do encourage you to join our series. Prevent Connect does talk about both domestic violence, intimate partner violence, and sexual violence. We address violence across the lifespan. We speak to address to prevent before violence starts in the first place and to be able to connect to other forms of violence and other related issues. Prevent Connect is a national project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, sponsored by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views and information on this web conference do not necessarily represent the official views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. So with no further ado, I am really pleased to be able to hand over the podium to my colleagues who I'm sitting right next to at Prevention Institute, Christine Chang and Annie Lyles. So welcome, Annie and Christine.
Hello.
Hey, thank you, David. I just want to welcome everyone to today's webinar, and this is Annie. You'll see my picture pop up here in the corner, especially all the folks that haven't joined us before. I hope you'll enjoy the lively community here on Prevent Connect. People tend to look out for each other here, and the dialogue tends to be amazing through the text chat. So welcome, and we're looking forward to hearing from you. I also want to introduce and welcome back our co-host, Christine Chang, also from Prevention Institute.
Hello, everybody. I'm very, very excited to be here with you all to discuss norms change. I think it's going to be a really great discussion. We have some great guests here to speak with you, and we definitely want to hear from all you participants. So we should just get going. This is the third, like David said, in the series of webinars that we're hosting this year that really focuses on the five key norms that influence gender violence and the power of changing those norms as a key to prevention. And so during each webinar, we really built upon foundational understanding of what primary prevention is. We've talked about specific strategies for changing damaging norms, and then we've examined how we can counter those key norms in order to end gender violence.
Thanks, Christine. So, you know, you're going to be hearing about some exciting success stories from our guests on top of all of that. And combined, you know, in the next 90 minutes, we hope that you're going to understand how the norms create an environment which gender violence is more likely to occur, provide some examples of success from people or organizations working to counter these norms, and we're counting on you to text in some examples as well. So be thinking. We'll also be looking at some strategies and some potential indicators for measuring success in this progress.
Yeah. So just to get going, we want to make sure that everybody here is starting from the same place, and we want to be clear that when we're talking about primary prevention, which we will repeat throughout the webinar, we're talking about strategies that address violence before it ever occurred in the first place.
Right. One way to think about this is upfront, in the thick, and in the aftermath. So I take away all the fancy primary, secondary, tertiary terms and think about upfront instead of primary. Think about the things everyone needs to grow and thrive. That's where we really are sitting today in primary prevention. Things in the thick and things in the tertiary are also important, but we're really thinking about what everyone needs, things that take place before violence has ever occurred.
Exactly. And you know, Annie, I think it's really easy for a lot of people to confuse primary prevention and primary prevention approaches with services like early intervention for victims and perpetrators. And early interventions are really crucial because they can help alleviate trauma and even potentially prevent future incidences of violence. But early intervention services don't necessarily make changes to the broader community and societal environments that give rise to the violence in the first place.
Right. I mean, I think, Christine, you make an important point. Early interventions may help stop violence once it starts, but they don't necessarily prevent violence from starting in the first place. So primary prevention, our focus here today, moves far upstream to change the environmental factors, like economic inequalities, sexism, media, marketing practices, the kinds of things that shape the norms and the behaviors of an entire population.
Right. And in today's discussion, we're talking about those upfront approaches to change environments so that girls and boys can thrive and gender violence is less likely to occur. So when we use that primary prevention approach, we have to address norms. Norms obviously influence our environment tremendously, and they help us explore social factors that contribute to violence against women.
Right. So, you know, if you're thinking about, you know, what's contributing to violence against women, we know that social community environments are essential in shaping behavior. We all experience social norms in our own lives.
Definitely.
Right? They shape our behavior, what's socially acceptable, what you can do in a certain situation.
Right. And, for example, I mean, we experience different social expectations for how we should act at work compared to home versus school.
Right? A sports stadium versus a wedding.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, often norms are really ingrained in what we do that we don't really talk about them or even necessarily notice that they're there.
Right. I mean, I think people, we all know, generally conform to those around them in their behavior, in their thinking. And what they do, you know, whether they mean it or not, they're perpetuating these behaviors and establishing them as norms.
I think the good news here when we talk about norms is that norms, they do change.
Right.
And
right.
We identified five key norms that if changed, they will decrease the likelihood of gender violence from occurring in the first place.
So let's take a peek through these five norms. And, you know, they should be familiar to you because these are actually the five norms and the five topics for the webinar series this year. So number one is the general acceptability of violence or culture of violence. Number two is a narrow definition of masculinity. And then number three is limited roles for women, which is today's focus. Number four is the value placed on power, even when it means having power over others. And the fifth one is the idea that gender violence is a private matter or a secret. And I think this norm is one that we've seen the most change on mm-hmm. in the last 25, 30 years.
And seeing as everyone's here today, I think it's really exciting, you know, to see the changing of those norms. And as Annie said, this has been the focus of our webinar series this year. And today's focus, just to repeat and make sure that you all are in the right webinar, we are focusing on the limited roles for girls and women.
Great.
So I think, you know, whether we're male or female, we can generally accept that we know that it affects what people expect of us and how we're treated.
Sure. I mean, messages that girls and boys get about what it means to be a woman can increase or decrease the likelihood of gender violence.
And today we're also going to talk about expanding ideas about the role of women in society. And then also, like Annie said earlier, we want to identify those promising strategies that broaden the roles for women as a way to prevent gender violence.
Right. So let's start about expectation for girls. When we think about the limited roles for women as a norm, we're saying that as a woman and girls, we're brought up to behave in certain ways or play a limited role.
Exactly. And from a young age, I think this picture right here on the slide, it shows females are often encouraged through subtle and overt messages to act and be treated as objects and sometimes be used and controlled by others. And girls really get a training into a very narrow definition of femininity, which often includes common stereotypical
mm-hmm.
girly, I'm using my quote fingers, girly characteristics, such as being agreeable or being passive. And this image right here is really interesting. There we go. this image that Annie found actually on ToysRUs.com,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
it's you know, a toy. It's a play vacuum, but the product description, interestingly, says Dirt Devil Play Vacuum, just like moms. I mean, there are some very subtle messages being sent there.
Right, and I think the Dolce & Gabbana ad is it's a sharp difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first thing seems really innocent. The second thing, more problematic, but extreme. Like, we're not saying that Dolce & Gabbana, no one, I think, would say that they're, you know, saying that, you know, rape is okay or gang rape is okay, and yet why is this image portrayed and what does this say about kind of the role of women more subtly in our society? So there's a lot to think about here, and I think you all probably have some examples in media and things that you've seen that have put those limited roles for women to the test. So, okay, let's think about those limited roles. And, you know, all girls grow up with social training and expectations about what it means to be a woman, but the messages girls get often depend on many factors. Girls may receive different messages and expectations about womanhood depending on their class status, ethnicity, the number of generations they've spent in the U.S.,
yeah,
right?
Yes, definitely. And I think it's important to emphasize that in each group, there are examples of those narrow definitions of what it means to be a woman.
Right.
And then also in each group, whether it's, you know, class status or ethnicity, like you said, there are also women who are resisting and reframing those narrow definitions as their identity as women.
Right. We don't want to ever chalk this up to one culture or another because that's really not the case, right? I went on to Google and I put these images up here because I put girls. And if you want to ever do this with your coworkers, I think this is interesting. I went into Google Images, I typed the word girls, and I had 182 million results. There were women of all different ethnicities, and you can imagine what they were wearing, which was not much. So you had a very diverse picture of sexualized women as the result of girls. So I was going through, and on the fourth page of results, I found the Golden Girls, which is hilarious because they certainly stick out. And then down on the page 13, I found this image of the young women in this right-hand corner, right? So I went through 13 pages of results before I found something that, to me, looked like girls. Still a little old, but they looked kind of, you know, a little bit more representative of the population. Now, they tend, and it's hard to tell from the picture, to look Caucasian, right? I clicked on the picture to see what it was of, and the title on the picture is Nerdy Girls. And it was heartbreaking, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
what are these images?
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, there weren't any women of color you know, that I could find that had this kind of contrary, more realistic expectation. And so you think about all this through this lens of racism, classism, and it's just important to keep that lens on as we think about limited roles for women.
Yeah, and I think in this conversation, I think it's important to point out, you know, there are there's a very diverse range of the types of communities that we live in, and we're referring not only to those Western or dominant models, but also the diverse, you know, upstream environments of all our different communities.
Right. I mean, we're really asking you this question. You know, in all communities, we have the opportunity to go upstream, change the damaging norms that are portrayed and experienced by girls and women. We have to start asking this question. What sort of environments are girls being raised in? How are their behaviors influenced by these norms? When and how is acting like a girl or behaving like a woman taught to the next generation? We all have a responsibility for that. You know, people think, oh, this is what happens in families, but, you know, there's a huge impact outside of that.
Definitely, and there's a great amount of opportunity there. And if we do want to change those environments and norms, we have to take that community-level approach, kind of take that broader lens and go upstream.
Right. All right, well, I'm glad to see the YWCA is in the house, as it were. And I hope that, we've got claps. I love it. So what I'd love to see is all of you stretching out your fingers, go ahead and getting onto your keyboards, because concretely, you know, we want to start with the current environment. How are you seeing limited definitions of femininity being taught and reinforced? And so let's go ahead and get some commentary here. And let's see, examples have been encouraged. Let's see.
Right now we're still getting people talking about who's in the house. Now.
Sports,
no equal or supported.
Oh, Daniel, you'll hear a lot from one of our guests today about some really exciting opportunities around sports.
Okay.
Kayla mentions music videos.
Abstinence-only education.
Media. Give me some examples in the media, Renee. What have you been seeing?
Toys,
commercials.
Not pushing college and then couple that with Girls Gone Wild.
Right. Well, and I love the concept, too, is like you have two choices of women. The person put up women have to keep their innocence. And if you don't keep your innocence, you might as well be Girls Gone Wild, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do women do with their sense of sexuality? What does that look like?
It already passed, like Gabrielle mentioned, unequal pay, which is going to definitely...
Gretchen talked about Legos. And that's interesting because, of course, they do sell, this is now, quotes, Legos for girls that, of course, come in pink and purple.
Are you kidding? Legos.
I was a huge Lego fan growing up.
Can have a career but must be in charge of the household organization.
Right, that second shift that we learn about.
And then there's the clothes. Short skirts.
Hypersensitive toys, boys aisle and girls aisle.
There's a lot of talk about media.
Yeah, no, media for being short, tight, and being right. A tight for girls. Wow, short, tight, being right.
Yeah, I also
like
saw
that.
The trucker flats. The woman symbol on the trucker.
Oh, Deborah brings up an interesting one. Strong women are always single in movies and television. I hadn't thought about that. Strong women as a partner as well as being single.
Somebody in all these women, they always mention the Bratz dolls. Like, those seem to come up pretty frequently. Even in our discussion about boys and men, I think somebody mentioned those.
And Monica is bringing up the tiaras. And what's that show called?
I don't watch enough television.
Apparently. Oh, there's a tiara show for the girls, little girls. And thankfully, I don't know the title of it because I haven't been watching it. There we go. Toddlers and tiaras.
Oh,
and
my God.
And then there, to couple that with video vixens.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So
Rob is embarrassed.
Assertive equals bitch for women, but assertive equals assertive for men.
Right.
Interesting.
And then Amy brought up Disney, and I know Brandy's on the call. She knows my feelings about Disney, so.
Right.
Great.
So let's take this to the next level. You know,
so I think everyone has given some great examples. Definitely want to keep that discussion going. But we want to kind of shift that connection. So there are all these examples. How do these factors and how do these narrow roles for women that is characterized by all the things that you're saying, how do those make gendered violence more likely?
And this is a tough question. We wanted to pose it today because part of what we're doing here is practicing and thinking about how we take this work outside of the webinar. And, you know, we get a lot of pushback sometimes with specific audiences saying, well, it sounds good, but, you know, it doesn't really matter. Like, it's not really harming folks. And I pulled this clip of Miley Cyrus. Miley did a pole dance at the Nickelodeon Teen Choice Awards, which is really for preteens. You know, she's pretty covered up compared to her outfits that she's seen in other places, but literally put a pole on stage and did the pole dance, and they got a lot of flack, which is great. What's interesting to me is her dad's commentary on it. Billy Ray Cyrus, you can see his picture down below, says, you know, Miley loves to entertain people. This is harmless. You know, I'm telling her to stay focused. I'm not worried about this critique. And I think we see this a little bit, folks saying, well, what does it matter? What has a short skirt got to do with this? So let's kind of take a moment and ask, so what? What does these narrow roles, how do they contribute to gender violence being more likely? Renee, I'm going to ask us to be a little bit more specific than everything, because we do want to make that case. And so I think what I'll do is, while you guys get some answers in, let's open this up to Megan Williams from Hardy Girls Healthy Women and Corey Weschler from Team Up for Youth, our guests today, and give them kind of their organization's answer to this question. And then we'll kind of keep that text chat going as well. So, Megan, do you want to welcome?
Thank you. Great to be here.
Great. Could you start us off, you know, kind of in your thinking about Hardy Girls, you know, what have these things got to do with, you know, gender violence being more likely to occur?
Well, I think when there becomes just, you know, if you look at the media, just one way to grow up, and Miley Cyrus is just one example of a whole bunch of pop stars that girls look up to and grow up with, who turn into these hypersexualized young women. You know, Miley Cyrus's new CD is Untamed. I mean, she's clearly playing on the, you know, the sexiness that is selling and that sells so much. But, you know, Britney Spears and Lindsay Lohan and even Amanda Bynes are all women who have grown up and, you know, they were fun and funky little girls have grown into these hypersexualized women. And when those are the role models that our girls have today, they're going to, you know, adopt those aspirations as well. And so, so at Hardy Girls, we're really focused on helping girls critique the images they see in the media and giving them a safe space to really question what those messages are and where they're coming from and what they can do to push back against them. Because that's really key is engaging girls in these conversations and then also giving them a platform to do something about it.
Right. And I think that's one of the things that Hardy the Girls does exceptionally well is giving them something to do about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited to kind of go into that a little bit further.
And Corey, could you chime in? And we definitely are so happy that you're here with us and give your feedback in terms of how you think that the normalization of, you know, the limited female gender roles really contribute to gender violence.
Sure. Hi, everyone. We all learn who we are by what is around us. We take in all of the images and all the messages, and depending on what those are, directly impact who we become, but also, as importantly, how people see us. Because as we are learning who we are also learning who other people are and what's expected. And so when we have these really when we have these images of girls that are really limiting or messages, and the flip side, when we don't have certain images of what it means to be a girl or woman, that directly informs what the next generation becomes and how we treat them and raise them, which directly then affects, you know, in terms of treatment, totally feeds into kind of the cycle of violence and violence in general.
And I think that's the point that, you know, folks don't always make is how does this lead into the cycle of violence, right? And I think the commentary I'm seeing, and let's go ahead and open it up for you all to chime in a little bit more. I think I saw some comments earlier, and actually Sarah just stopped me in my tracks, but the ultimate goal of girls is to attract the male gaze. It's like they have no other value.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you think about that from the opposite side, because sometimes I want to think about this from a perspective of young boys and what we're treating them,
mm-hmm.
you know, their view is that women should desire the male gaze,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so how does that contribute to gender violence? In the comments before, I think people talked about it, the men wear the pants in the family was one comment, that, you know, your self-esteem gets lowered because there's this unrealistic expectation of beauty, which makes violence more likely to occur, you're more likely to put up with things,
mm-hmm.
and sexual objectification, I think, was an important point that I saw a little earlier as well.
Oh, and I've seen a lot of really interesting commentary about, you know, what women wear in different statuses. Like, if you are a pop star, you're expected to show as much skin as possible to sell your record or your movie or whatever. But if you're a politician and you're wearing a suit, and this is a totally different light, and really limits us.
Well, we were in a training the other day, and a woman mentioned, well, when I'm a supervisor, I get into my male side, and I could become, you know, more dominant, more controlling. And then she paused and said, oh, I can't believe I just said that. And it's just an interesting thought that even as women, we've absorbed some of these things.
Yeah.
What does it mean to be a woman but also be, you know, a leader? And and how we're treated as women as leaders. I saw a comment earlier that the women there, you know, aren't seen as feminine, or they're judged on their appearance rather than their intelligence.
Definitely. I mean, I've known peers, and there's all these types of references to women leaders being the man. That's just the words that people use. Really interesting. I've seen some really great responses coming from participants. We want to keep your input going. I think it's been a great discussion so far. Lisa Fleming has her hand up.
Yes, if you have a question, Lisa, why don't you go ahead and let us know if you wanted to unmute your phone by writing in the text chat or this. I also sent her a private chat. So
okay.
Great.
All right. Well, great. Well, let's go ahead and turn to our guest today and get a little bit deeper into this and keep this context going. I think there's some really important lessons that we're hearing from people. This is, you know, how I learn how to talk about the issue is hearing from other people, my peers talking about it. So I encourage you to keep these commentaries up and I really appreciate it. But I think what we want to do right now is go ahead and turn things back over to our guests for today. Our guest panelists are both working incredibly hard, doing important work, changing norms, and expanding the roles of girls and women in our communities.
So we want to go ahead and welcome Megan back to the podium. Megan, thanks again so much for joining us. And you are the executive director of Hardy Girls Healthy Women. And Hardy Girls really counters those limited roles for women by challenging gender stereotypes. And you gave us a little bit of insight earlier in your feedback. How is that goal incorporated in your day-to-day work?
Well, we're really focused. A lot of girls' organizations are focused on sort of fitting girls into the status quo, working on their self-esteem or confidence or other sort of internal psychological issues. Hardy Girls is really focused on addressing girls' lives in the relational and social context, exactly what you all are talking about. We think that it's not the girls, but rather the culture that girls are growing up in that's in need of repair. So the work we do with girls is not helping them sort of fit into their roles as girls, their sort of traditional roles or dominant roles, but rather to help them question what those roles are and why those roles exist. So we're called Hardy Girls, so that notion, we're trying to create hardiness zones for girls. So for people who are into gardening, you know that plants need certain things to thrive in certain areas. And it's the same with girls. They need certain things from their communities, from their peers, from their parents, from their schools in order to really thrive. And we think those are the key agents of change in girls' lives. And so if we can create that connection for girls with each other, with their peers, with the adults in their lives, and then also challenge them to do something about it, then we can really provide girls with a lot of agency, and that is, you know, that's how we change the world as far as we're concerned.
Yeah. Nice. No, and I think we put up this image really quickly, and I'm sorry we didn't do it right when you first began speaking, but I think it's a really striking example of the way young women internalize that environment around them and, you know, where they're kind of sitting in struggle. I know gender stereotypes about female aggression are a really hot topic. I hear a lot about queen bees and mean girls. You know, what's your take on the norms around girls and relational aggression?
I think, you know, a lot of this girl-fighting messaging occurs once girls hit adolescence, although in the last couple of years we've seen this messaging happening hitting girls at younger and younger ages. And at a time when girls really should be turning to each other for support and understanding and be feeling in coalition with one another, that's the point when they're, you know, getting this message that girls aren't to be trusted, that they're, you know, they'd rather stab you in the back than have your back, that girls are just inherently mean or catty or backstabbing. It's an incredibly divisive and damaging message. And if you think about the potential that girls have when they work together, then you know, if you sorry, I'm reading the I'm trying to talk and read the chat at the same time. So our work is really focused on building coalitions of girls because we know that we can counteract these messages around girl fighting, that girls are not inherently mean or catty. And so one of our programs, which is shown here, is our Girls Coalition Groups, which is a middle school program for girls to have discussions around issues that matter to them. The discussions range from, you know, body image to bullying to sexual harassment to dating, healthy dating relationships. And the idea is to really engage girls in critical conversation about the messages, not just the media messages, but the cultural messages they're getting about how they're supposed to look and act and feel, what they're supposed to wear, et cetera, and then help them understand where those messages come from. And once they understand that, and for those of you who work with youth, you know that girls have a very keen sense of fairness and justice. Actually, teen girls and boys do. So once you get them fired up about sort of being duped by these big corporations or by the culture at large, they get pissed off. They want to do something about it. And that's where we really can engage girls' anger productively. And that's what our girls' groups are focused on, not just talking about it, but doing something about it. So all of our groups do activist work.
I think one of the things that's really interesting to me about this activist work is that your organization is really working to shift the way people even approach the work with girls. And, you know, I want to read this. There's a PDF of this, and we'll put a link up for you in the text chat to a speech that I found really inspirational that one of your founders, Lynn Michael Brown, wrote. And she says, and I'm going to quote her here because the language is eloquent, shifting the focus away from self-esteem or depression or eating disorders, the symptoms of individual stress and distress, and to widen the lens to consider the social, political landscape in which a girl comes of age really should be the focus. And she goes on to challenge us, you know, as adults, to really create a hearty environment, which you talked about a little bit more in the gardening. And, you know, I'm just wondering, how does that play out into program development? You know, people are focused so much on curriculum. You know, how do you actually shift that focus away from individual and, you know, affect social political landscape?
You know, I don't think there's an easy answer to that. I think, you know, it's very easy to, you know, do individual work and say, you know, if you can just realize that these images are Photoshopped, then you won't have low self-esteem. That just simply doesn't work anymore because girls are so saturated in media today.
Right.
But so I think curriculum and programs and all of our curriculum programs focus on how do we create the ideal environment for girls to thrive. And that means that we've got, you know, groups or programs that are run by women who've done their own work, who've examined their own biases and assumptions about girls and women. And it means that we're really creating a safe space. So this means it's a girls-only space. It means it's, you know, free of judgment, but, you know, where girls can say anything that they need to say when they can really be real, you know. Because so much of girls' interactions today tend to be sort of constrained and it's a performance. But if we can really create spaces where girls can be real, can connect with each other and strong adult female role models, and then also can be given the supports that they need and the trust that they need from adults to do some of this work on their own, then that's how we believe you create a hardiness zone. There are three components of hardiness, and folks can find out lots more information about this on our website, but it's control, commitment, and challenge. Girls need to feel like they have control of their own lives. They need to feel like they have commitment from the adults in their lives, and they need to control, commitment, and challenge, and to be challenged to do their best work.
Yeah, that's amazing. I
was so impressed with the Hardy Girls Healthy Women website. I hope everybody does check it out and see the amazing work and the programs that are available and the way that they really are addressing norms. Megan, just to close, can you share with us some of the outcomes from all the things that you do in your work, some lessons learned that you can share with all our participants today?
Yes, I can. Can I talk really quickly about this slide? This is one of our outputs.
Pack a slide, too, and talk a little bit more about Sparks as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of our outcomes is girls doing activist work. We really want to be engaging girls in changing the status quo. So one of the programs that is up here on the slide is Powered by Girl, which is our new online community for teen girl activists who want to do some of this media literacy work and media activism work. We're particularly focused on sexualization and healthy notions of sexuality because of our partnership in the Spark Summit, which is a day-long summit to challenge the sexualization of girls that we're doing in collaboration with Women's Media Center, True Child, and the ASAP initiative at Hunter College. Spark Summit doesn't have a website yet, but you guys can find them on both Facebook and Twitter. But it'll be a summit that will actually kick off a movement to really challenge the way that girls are sexualized in the media today, but will also put forward sort of a wider spectrum of girls' sexuality. Powered by Girl will be an essential component of how we do that work, because we can't do this work without girls. We can't do it without being in partnership with girls, because this is their lives, right? This is their media, and you can't just say, you know, your media is bad because they're so engaged with it. But we are really faced with this opportunity where girls are so engaged online and often in creating their own media, and we really need to leverage this moment to create an upswell of pushback, but also, again, of the positive stuff.
And I think you mentioned it, but I just wanted to highlight that people can virtually attend the conference, right?
It is true, yeah. And our website should be up by the end of the month, where people can pre-register for the conference October 22nd. But I would encourage folks to get engaged in the conversation, because we really want to, you know, we're sort of in the process of creating the program, and we really want to hear what folks are interested in learning about at the summit.
Great.
Do you want to move to the next slide?
Yeah, we'll let you talk a little bit about this lovely image.
So probably for those of you doing prevention work, you may know that Axe body spray, the company Axe, is a frequent offender when it comes to the horrendous images they put up about boys and girls and their relationships with each other. This is an advertisement that our Girls Advisory Board they powered by Girl it, they PBG'd it. What they did was to really take it apart, deconstruct it, and talk about the themes that were appearing in it, and also raise awareness about the fact that, you know, Axe is owned by the same company that owns Dove, which is Unilever. You know, and they talk about some of the just stereotypes that you see in here, you know, that girls are most powerful when they're sexy, skinny, and objectified, which simply is not true. And then, you know, they play fun games or do a call to action, you know, count the number of times pink is used. So what we're encouraging girls to do is to take advertisements like this and mark them up, tell the media, the corporations, the marketing execs, what they really think about it, to move them around their social media, and then also to send them to the company. Because in this age of sort of the democratization of media, girls' input like this, the sort of images they create like this, can make a real difference in how marketing companies create their messages.
Right. And I think you're seeing some of that reflected in the text chat right now about, you know, that Dove is also doing the Real Women campaign and, like, the complexity of that, and Top Model, again, you know, really objectifying women and kind of setting a beauty standard but also trying to expand it. And, you know, there's a lot of complexity in this work. I think it's really interesting. We just had a hand raised here for a minute, so I wanted to open it up for a question.
So Lisa Fleming, you've raised your hand. I don't know if you're on the phone or not. You can press *1 on your phone. If you're not on the phone, you can call the number that's on the top of your screen, and we can take your question. I sent a private chat, but I haven't heard. So, operator, if you get a *1 from Lisa Fleming, then we can open up her lines. Let us know when she comes in.
Thank you.
Megan, I saw a question a little bit earlier about how, in your work with girls, you keep them from trying to one-up each other or try to impress them, kind of the internalized that role of women.
That's a great question. I think you, in our program, specifically the Girls Coalition groups, we spend a lot of time at the outset creating a safe space for girls. And once they feel like they're not being judged, and once they feel like they really can speak their mind and can contribute, they're not as likely to one-up. I think it's dangerous to assume that girls will try to one-up each other in group work, because we find that that's just not true. And as long as the facilitators of the group, the leaders, are setting a good example and really respecting and honoring each girl's contributions, I don't expect that you would see that girls are trying to one-up each other, especially not after the first several sessions.
So some of that is just facilitation. Great. Now, Megan, you're going to be able to hang out with us for a little bit longer?
Mm-hmm.
Great, because I think strategy section that we'll transition to after we hear from Corey. There's some other more strategies I think it'll be great to highlight.
Thank you so much for your input, Megan. And we want to turn it over now to Corey Wexler, who is from Team Up for Youth here in Oakland. And thank you so much for being here, Corey.
My pleasure.
Great. So your new initiative, Get in the Game, is designed especially for girls. And why is there a focus on girls? And how do you think that girls and women benefit from sports? Love to hear about it.
Our initiative, the Game Plan, focuses on getting girls, specifically in low-income communities, involved in organized sports. And the reason we're so focused on that and kind of fired up about it is that when you look at who has access to sports, this is a population that doesn't at all. And so very often we hear people saying, oh, well, why do you need to focus on girls at all? They have opportunities. They're playing. They're out in, you know, involved in sports. We see it in the numbers. And our response is, yes, that's true in affluent neighborhoods, and that is not happening in poor communities. In general, as with anything else, they have poor communities have way less access to this, and girls even more so. And so we're really committed to helping to level the playing field, partially because there are so many incredible benefits to all young people participating in sports. And the little research that has come out recently shows that the benefits are even greater for girls in low-income communities because the lack of access to resources in general. And so Girls in the Game focuses both on programmatically getting more sports opportunities up and running for girls, but then also looking at the other kind of pieces that need to be in place so girls can have access, because we have found that it's not enough just to set up programs. There are so many barriers that keep girls out of the game. Besides the economic barriers, there's also cultural barriers and family responsibility, safety issues, incredible myths around what it means to be a girl that make it very difficult for girls to get in the game. And so we really recognize that there have to be other pieces in place, policies, family involvement, community involvement, advocacy happening so girls can access sports. And so it's something that's encouraged and seen as a benefit in these communities.
Well, and I think, you know, your approach is really comprehensive, and I think that's really important to point out, that you're not just offering a program, that you're really looking at changing the environment so girls can participate in sports. And I think that's very much in alignment with the field for violence against women, is wanting to change environments. How would your organization make the case that sports has anything to do with making violence against women more likely to occur?
I think sports is a really amazing medium because it's all about being in the body, and it's all about being having a movement vocabulary, being assertive, being confident, and so I think that directly connects to how girls and then women grow into themselves. The more you are in your body, the more you experience your strength, the more you're encouraged to take up space in your body, I think directly impacts how you see yourself and how people view you in the world as you're moving through the world, which totally connects to issues of violence, especially when you have girls in programs where the coaches are being really intentional, not only about getting them in their body on the physical, you know, on the physical level, but also transferring the lessons that they're learning to the rest of their lives. So lessons like going after the ball, like go for the ball, chase it down, you know, be the best that you can be. If coaches can then translate that and help girls to see how they can bring that into their school life, into their home life, into their community, then you're really having a coach who's impacting young people's full development.
You know, I haven't thought about it that lately, but, you know, I never excelled in sports. I played team sports a lot growing up, and I think the camaraderie, right, it was a time to really work cooperatively with girls, but we also, it was competitive. We had a focused goal. We were practicing. We were working to achieve that goal. We were learning, you know, what to do if we didn't get to that goal. But there's a lot of lessons there in terms of, it's a fancy word, self-efficacy, you know, the ability to set a goal, reach it. You know, you don't have to do it by yourself. That I hadn't necessarily thought about with sports, but your point, I think, is really strong.
Yep, and I also kind of connected to that. I feel like one of the things sports teaches, definitely men, and teaches women when women and girls can access it is you have the right to excel. You have the right to be the best that you can be. You have the right to be better than other people. And you have control over that. And those are really powerful messages for girls to get. And they don't get that very often. And they don't get to experience it on a physical level even more so.
I think that's really wonderful work that you're doing, Corey, and I think it's so exciting, and sports has been mentioned throughout the text chat here as a great way to, you know, approach the norms change. Kind of to shift gears, you mentioned back in your explanation of all your different initiatives how comprehensive that is in terms of, like, giving girls access to those sports, right? So can I ask you what made you decide to explore policy and as a strategy in terms of your work?
Policy has always been part of our work at Team Up for Youth, and it's really clear to us that you have to be making change at that level, and you have to have policies in place that open up doors, you know, lower, below. And so, I mean, we saw that with Title IX, right, that as soon as Title IX passed, the number of women involved in sports skyrocketed. And it wasn't that all of a sudden they were interested, but all of a sudden they had access. And so we really believe we have to be working simultaneously on the ground in programming and then also doing the policy work, partly because then you have those pieces in place and you can kind of use that as a leverage, but also then you're educating a whole other, you know, population and getting them to be part of a constituency that's really advocating for and moving this effort forward.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is, I just want to put out there that I see in the tech chat a lot of comments about size and the change of size in clothing. And I want to push the folks in the audience, you know, we're talking about policy change and kind of some really big challenges for the field. And I think that, you know, changes of size in clothing is a symptom of the issue, but let's focus on the real issue here, which is really looking at how do we change the environment for young women. And I think, Corey, your project and your initiative is fundamentally changing that structure and making sure that sports is available for girls. We had a question earlier, and I saw the text chat earlier was about fathers and the role in fathers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know that your organization, while it's focused on getting the girls in the game, that you also explicitly have a role for men to play in that. And I wanted to, you know, how do men as allies also shift limited roles for women?
Sure. And one of the things that we found, which is kind of wonderful and exciting, is that there are a lot of men and fathers out there coaching their children and specifically coaching their daughters. And what we have found is if we can tap into that body of men and really encourage them to be champions, to be the ones advocating not only for their daughters but their daughters' friends, that there's a shift that happens in the conversation because of their position in the family and in society. And so we have been really making a concerted effort to tap into that population and encourage them to have a role in getting girls in the game, a larger role than just as a coach, but as, you know, a verbal champion.
I think that's such an amazing initiative and such a great effort from Team Up to be approaching it that way. Corey, really quick, can you share some of the outcomes from your initiatives and some of the lessons learned?
Sure. I mean, in terms of programmatically, one of the things that we have seen immediately is that as soon as we put out that we're able to help set up sports programs for middle schools, that there's like this flurry of interest. Like, people want to be able to provide this to girls. People recognize the importance, and it's challenging. It's hard to get girls involved because it's still not seen as what they do, especially at middle school. And so really exciting outcome is that we have a ton of really successful girls' leagues up and running in the Bay Area. And so that's a big piece. More broadly, in terms of kind of public education, like we've had summit gatherings that have brought a range of community members together, and again, just seeing the conversation that people want to be having this conversation and gathering has been a really great outcome. We've been working, I think we're going to talk more about this later, but AB 2404, a policy that is kind of the sister policy to Title IX, but for public spaces in California, and really thinking about how do we help equity issues in public spaces for girls in sports. Mm. So that's kind of a range of both things we've been working on and the kind of the change that we've seen happening as a result.
We have a question from David. He said, what does it mean to be a verbal champion as a male coach for women's sports?
Good question. So really speaking up about the benefits of girls participating in sports, being willing to, you know, to get in there and get into arguments because people really push back, being a coach and drawing people in, being proactive and drawing people in. I think talking to schools and asking schools, why aren't you offering girls programs or how can we offer girls programs? Going to community centers and saying, hey, I'm concerned. I see a lot of boys out on the playing field, but where are the girls? You know, really being active that way, as close to home as your kids and your kids' friends, and then kind of broadly the communities that they're in, and really challenging people to look at the disparity in who's being served.
Yeah. Really quick, I know we want to let folks go to strategy, but someone had a question about do you have opportunities for coaches to do training? And I think that you do on your website, right?
Yeah, so I'll just briefly share that the other focus of the game plan is to get women in the role of coaches, because they, as role models, can have a really profound impact on girls, but also for them to see that they can have a profound impact affects who they are. And so we do a lot of recruitment and training of coaches, and female coaches in particular. And yes, we have we provide trainings, and we have a lot of training resources for sports coaches. Please check out our website, or you can contact me directly. We have a bunch of guides and curriculum that are about to get rolled out this fall that will be online and really easy, free, easy to download and use.
Great. I see we have a question from Lindola.
And if you can press *1 on your phone, then we can unmute your phone. So, operator, do we have someone to press *1?
Not at this time.
So, Gwendola Mills-Parker, you had raised your hand. If you have a question, I see you're on the phone. Go ahead and click, press *1.
Two seconds. Great. Go ahead. I think there was a question earlier about expanding and the kind of the scope of Team Up for Youth. Could you speak to that?
Expanding
geographically, where are you?
So we right now we serve California, so the Bay Area and LA, San Diego, and the Fresno area. And with these resources that are going to be online, we're doing a lot of providing tools outside of California, and also specifically, I mentioned Team Up for Girls helping programs set up leagues, and so we will do that from a distance also. So we offer a webinar for regions who are interested in setting up girls' leagues, and then the follow-up hands-on resources for them to set up, as well as sports equipment and T-shirts for those who need that. And so that's something that we do at a distance. And again, if there's any interest, please, please feel free to contact me directly, and I can give you more details.
Yeah, I think this is just it's a really interesting piece that, you know, Team Up for Youth may not be the lead agency, or the DV, sexual assault agency may not be the lead, but it's a really exciting collaboration when you think about prevention and some opportunities for women that are, really wanting to make an impact. But this is a really good, collaborative project. And, before we kind of talk about more strategies and more opportunities for collaboration, we'll give Gwendola one more chance. Gwendola, are you there?
I think she had trouble with her phone. So.
All right, so we'll
get there soon. Let's go on to the next topic.
Yeah.
Great. So we want to use the next 10 minutes to generate some strategy ideas that counter narrow roles for women.
So as some of you may already know, the Spectrum of Prevention is a tool that Prevention Institute has created. We've been using this to develop that comprehensive approach that shifts community norms. So we're going to focus and highlight each of the levels of the spectrum of prevention, and we're going to start with the bottom three levels of the spectrum, some that most of you probably know very, very well, which is individual skills, community education, and provider training. So we have a couple examples for you here. Slide. Great.
Great. And so, this is probably the easiest place for folks to think about is strengthening individual knowledge and skills. We have an example of Expect Respect, which is a well-respected curriculum. It's probably one of my favorites to use at a safe place in Austin. Promoting community education is another strategy at that level. And if you haven't seen it yet, Gene Kilborn's brand new Killing Us Softly 4 is out, and that's available, and you can actually preview it online. That's been an incredible force, I think, in helping us, you know, I guess, starting that conversation many, many years ago about women in the media. And the last example we have up here for educating providers is actually Team Up for Youth, Corey. And you mentioned it, and one of the things Team Up for Youth is doing is, you know, educating providers, coaches, and that your goal is to recruit and train 750 new women coaches by the end of 2011. Can you tell us a little bit about kind of the goal of that project?
Well, that's the goal, get the young women to, you know, stay in their communities and work with the next generation. The relationship between female coaches and their players is a really powerful one. Again, one of the focuses of our training is how do you help coaches be intentional in their coaching, and so it's not just sports for sports' sake, but sports for helping to really develop these young girls into powerful, confident women, and I'm giving them tools to do that, and who best to deliver that but women. And, of course, you know, a lot of comments about, like, men have a really important role in that, and male coaches do, for sure. But when we've talked to young women and girls about kind of memorable coaches, when they talk about their female coaches, the few that have had female coaches, it's a very different kind of relationship. And so we really want to make sure that the next generation has that, and also that we have these, that we help women see themselves as role models.
Yeah, and I want to acknowledge Sarita's question here, what are boys' and men's roles in creating change and how women are viewed? And if you go back, and I think we can put a link in, the focus of the last webinar was really about the role of men and boys and their role in this work. And so I'm not going to kind of put our focus on that today because we did spend the last webinar, but I think the dialogue was just incredibly rich with incredible guests, and I think you can learn a lot by looking at the slides and the audio. David has that all available. So I'm not going to answer that question now, but we did spend, you know, a whole session on it looking at that. So what we do want to focus on, though, is giving you all a chance to share your tips and your examples.
Yes. So let's all get back to the text chat, and we want to hear from you in terms of what are the strategies at the individual and the community and providers level that really counter limited roles for women.
Great. And I saw an example just a second ago of someone put in another community education video, which was, I think it's called Dream, my text chat is moving too quickly already, Dream World 3, and then another example is community education. So what else have you guys experienced kind of from your level and some primary prevention strategies? What have you been thinking about doing? What would you have already been doing at the individual, community, and provider level? We'd love to hear from you. Sounds like you're typing in long answers here.
Dream World again.
Yeah, lots of discussion about Dream World and some of the questions of the voice, because it is, is it a critique or are there youth voices and does it feel judgmental or not, were some of the questions that people were commenting about earlier. Mm-hmm. So what are some other strategies that people have used or see to use on the individual, community, or provider level that can counter limited roles? Mentoring, rites of passages for programs for girls.
Yeah, we've seen that a lot with young men, and it's interesting that the rites of passages are now coming around as a strategy for young women as well. I think that'll be great. Christine wants Megan to speak more on the Spark Summit. I think at the end, if we have a little time, we can talk a little bit more about that, and I think Megan is happy to talk about that if you guys get in touch with her.
Financial empowerment programs for girls and women.
Readings on gender relations, absolutely.
Bystander education.
Oh, interesting, Lisa. Financial empowerment programs. I know when I think about some of the work in developing countries, microcredit, microlending, and you think about that with women in the U.S., it's probably a really exciting thing to do as well.
Discussion groups with men on attraction, reinforcing, and norm of women's sexual identities, and nothing more. It's really interesting. Self-defense classes.
There's a lot about gender and moving away from the binary nation of gender. We're talking about Ground Spark, which has some great pieces. We actually have a Prevent Connect interview with Christy from talking about Ground Spark, the work that they do. Real exciting effort.
And I hope I'm saying name right, Margetta or Marjeta, was talking about career advancement and looking at some male-dominated fields and about, you know, really highlighting opportunities for women. We were thinking about, you know, the American Reinvestment Act, you know, a lot of money going into construction. We thought about, you know, what does that mean for women and the investments for women because it's such a male-dominated field. So keeping that lens on and thinking about that.
I think the media analysis is definitely something.
Yeah.
That is what we've been discussing today, and more mentoring, role modeling. Great.
Oh, it's interesting. A store owner. So Diana brings up an example of business getting involved, a program for middle school girls called Pay It Forward that looks at self-esteem. And the store is called Present Moment.
That's cool.
Interesting.
And there's another theme also around the sexual health education that Sarah talks about, and Brad talks about a sexuality education seminar on women's health and pleasure, and so that's a way to be able to move forward. And I know that that's another important piece that Megan had talked about in her around healthy girls, looking at healthy sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
So if people continue to give their strategies, this is really a great opportunity to share things that exist and things that we can learn and resources and things like that. We hope that you'll continue to contribute those strategies, but we're going to move on in the spectrum of prevention. We're going to move on to fostering coalitions and networks. And this involves people really coming together to share information. But the most successful coalitions really do go further than just sharing information.
Right. I mean, the whole idea of your fostering your coalition or your network is that you can do more together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just sharing the information, but, you know, what can you do as a team? Develop a rapid response media network maybe, you know, respond to breaking news together, proactive messages, joint funding together. You know, the most successful groups, you know, work in partnership to achieve their goals. We know that.
And I think we have a really great example right here that I love. It's called Take Back the Music campaign, which was launched by Essence Magazine a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the goal and the whole coalition, the working together, was to engage hip-hop artists to have a dialogue and education about sexism and misogyny in those music lyrics and videos and those connections to sexual violence.
Yeah, you know, this is an old campaign. I actually went and looked up to see what was going on with it, and Essence has actually taken it off their website at this point. What's interesting is their partner, which was the Berklee College of Music, was keeping this going, and you can see the young men performing here are three of the winners. There was a young woman that was also a winner, but they partnered with the Berklee College of Music and the mayor's office in the city to really bring this together and bring some attention, which is a much broader audience and much broader impact. So I think this is an interesting, you know, collaboration because of the collaboration, the movement went further. Even the originating organization had kind of moved on a little bit. The collaborating agencies, it was still relevant and important for them.
Definitely. I think it's really exciting to see that how these things will progress. And people are talking, Girls Rock Camp is another amazing program.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to check that out.
Let's open it up to the audience.
Like, they're already, you know, giving their strategies, which we love. Hearing back from you all, we would love to know what strategies at the coalition and networks level exist that counter the limited roles for girls and women.
And when you think about collaboration networks, who's partnering with who? One of the reasons we are excited to bring Team Up for Youth on organization, because they're not necessarily a sexual assault organization, and yet a collaboration with a sexual assault or domestic violence organization seems to make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
So we're wondering who else, you know, is in your coalition, who are you working with as part of your network to achieve your goals? And let's see.
Ooh, Planned Parenthood has a youth theater troupe. I like that.
Absolutely.
Bring the youth to the table, always. Great to have their voice.
Thank you, Gabriella, because I think that's one of the questions that's, you know, hard for folks to do is thinking about how, when and how to bring youth to the table.
So 4-H, Jess talks about.
Oh, interesting. And, of course, including men's groups, definitely.
Teen councils.
We were working in a community that the previous mayor had a teen council, a teen advisory board. The new mayor took over and said that was kind of a project of the old mayor, but the community really responded and said, no, this is something we want institutionalized in our community. And they revised it and made it part of that community charter to have that teen council. So I think there's some legacy and kind of some things to go beyond just the collaboration on those.
Definitely.
That are exciting.
Great.
And so I'm seeing another theme of dealing with reproductive health, sexuality education, and recognizing that there is a whole complexity that's involved with that issue. But I think it's really another important opportunity that we need to look explore how we're going to move forward with.
Right, and how we talk about it as partners. So there's people that are better experts about talking about it and what's happening in the issue, and those are really our partners that we can bring in sometimes.
I think Colleen, she's chair of a community coordination committee. She works with the RCMP, with City Hall, with hospitals, social workers, community agencies. Wow, Colleen, I think that's really amazing. And they're working on sexual assault protocols and working on prevention of violence in their entire community, and that's very diverse. Collaborate.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, if this is really about changing a community environment, mm-hmm. you need folks from the community, all aspects, to work on the issue.
Definitely.
Right? You can't work on it in isolation.
Great. Well, keep chiming in. We're getting some really great strategies shared here. We're going to move on to the next levels of the spectrum.
Yeah, the top two rungs.
The top two rungs. And, you know, as Annie mentioned, people know and are very familiar with the first three levels of the spectrum. And actually the top three levels are a little lesser known. And this is really what we want to focus on and challenge you all to be thinking creatively and strategically on how we can make concrete strategies to really push this work forward. Because, again, we want that real comprehensive approach.
And I think what I want to say really quick on the spectrum of prevention, though, you know, for folks that aren't doing as much policy and legislative work, think about the program you're running. Think about, you know, the education you're providing. What kind of policies or practices would better support your program, would better sustain your program? So if you don't know policy, let's start kind of with that lens. And we have some examples for you. One of the things that I noticed is that, you know, in the economic downturn, we're seeing a trend in the change of benefits offered by small businesses. So that's an organizational practice.
Mm-hmm.
And while none of us are, or most of us, I'm assuming, are not in the business of fighting for maternity or paternity leave, that really impacts a family, right? And when we're thinking about what does everyone need up front, well, they need a chance to bond with a new infant, to kind of come together as a family when you, you know, have a significant stressor or change.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen maternity leave being offered less over the last 4 years. Interestingly, paternity leave offered more. And it's not significant, but it's interesting kind of a change in that direction.
Mm-hmm. And that's the norm of, like, the father's role in the family. It kind of, mm-hmm. there's a shift in, it says here that maternity leave has been lowered. But interesting that paternity leave has been increasing. There's also institutionalizing girls' voices from the organization's leadership. And Megan can give us a little bit of feedback on that. And you can talk a little about this Girls Advisory Board. We'd love to hear about it.
Sure. So we are a 10-year-old organization, and about 5 or 6 years ago, hired our first staff and realized at that point that in order to say that we were girl-informed and girl-powered organization, we needed to not just be going to girls, you know, every once in a while and saying, what do you think about this? But we really needed to create a group of girls who had come out of our programs, who wanted to stay engaged, who could really inform us on what was going on in their lives. Because, you know, for those of you who work with youth, you know their lives are changing quickly, and the pressures that they're under today are not the same pressures necessarily that they were under 5 years ago or 10 years ago, and especially when we all were growing up. So we decided to create a girls' advisory board, which would be a group of teen girls, girls who had come out of our programs, had sort of graduated out and were too old to participate anymore in our established programs, who could do similar work to our board in that they were really advising us on our programming and keeping us sort of mission focused, but also would be a sounding board for us and would also generate ideas for us. So, for example, one of the things we wanted to create a couple years ago was a recognition ceremony that would honor girls who were doing activist work here in the state of Maine. And we knew there was a Women's Hall of Fame here in Maine, but we didn't think that there was a Girls Hall of Fame. And so we went to our Girls Advisory Board and said, hey, what do you guys think about having a Girls Hall of Fame? We could recognize girls who are doing great work here in the state, and they were all like, oh, Girls Hall of Fame sounds so stuffy. Why don't we call it the Girls Rock Awards? Then we'll honor girls who rock. So that's an example of how, and our Girls Rock Weekend has become, and our awards have become a really well-attended, really fun event, and we have lots of girls attending, not just adults. And so so we were really, you know, we were looking for a genuine way to really incorporate girls' voices and girls' leadership into the structure of the organization, and we found it in our Girls Advisory Board. But we also, you know, all of our programs are designed to really go where girls want to go, and so we have that, we build that flexibility into all of our curricular and program designs.
And I mean, I think that's a really important piece is that you build this in, right? It's a natural step. It's not just something that you go to. And I think this, the idea of doing policy, and I want to transition this to this next example with Corey's group, is that, you know, this is about creating more opportunities for girls and thinking about them as leadership roles and what is our role in order to give them space, but also as adults to advocate for them. And Corey, could you talk a little bit about kind of the role adults can play in supporting girls through this legislation?
Well, sure. I mean, you're talking about AB 2404 specifically?
Yeah.
Okay, so the great thing about AB 2404 is it exists, and not so great thing is that there's no holding anybody accountable for it, and so it's really, really important that all the different bodies of people are speaking up about the importance of it and really pushing sites to bring opportunities to girls. And one of the things that we're trying to figure out here is how do you work with organizations and kind of create a coalition, what you were talking about, to actually bring those policies alive so they're actually active, because right now they're not. And so, you know, working with Parks and Rec and working with schools and working with other sites, and so it's really a team effort, and that the kind of the effort is around, you know, opening these opportunities for girls. You know, and I think, like, this policy is a really kind of great example of the need for different, for coalitions of folks to be working together, because otherwise I think it's just going to be another one on the books.
Right. And, you know, it's in that coalition where movements like this come alive, right?
Yep, exactly.
So let's hear from you all. What are you working on with policy? What would you love to see in practice that support getting to your goals? You know, we'd be remiss if we didn't really think about organizational practice and policy changes. I know Patty always, Wetterling, she gave an example that stuck with me of a father that stood up during parent night at the sports league and said, you know, why is the young man's uniform look professional and polished and the girls have, you know, the school's name written across their rear end? And, you know, that's not acceptable to me. So you think about organizational practices. We belong to many organizations, and I think there's some real opportunities for us to think through what kind of changes we can ask for professionally but also personally.
Danny mentioned it's using gender violence certification into K-12 education degree programs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's interesting.
Interesting.
And then we got a lot. Colleen sent us a missive here.
Counselors? To change.
Oh, and they're changing their policy to hire more males.
Great.
Oh, and Gretchen has a question for the group. Anyone found strategies that work well for rural areas? Those of you that are in rural areas, if you could give some advice to Gretchen, that would be great. I know that there's some really interesting work happening through Catholic Health Initiative that does primarily work in rural communities, and I'd be happy to connect you with that if you send me an email later.
Great. There's mentioning about probation law enforcement should be required to take training in gender-specific topics. That's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
School teachers.
And so what we're talking about here is training, right? So a requirement for training is a policy.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to put folks to keep going with, you know, what is it that we want to see for policies in place, and what's the organizational practice? Because if you want the law enforcement and probation to be, you know, trained in gender-specific topics, what does that mean? Well, probably that you want, you know, girls to be treated equitably. You want fair sentencing. You want to look at disproportionate contact. You know, we know that girls are usually arrested for different types of offenses, and is it appropriate to criminalize running away? So think about this, you know, I think that the field is, we're still working on this,
mm-hmm.
right? And
definitely.
Thinking about what kind of practices do we want to put in place in organizations, not just training and leaving it up to the individual to be well-trained, but what policies support that good training?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and since we're getting a little bit low on time, we definitely wanted to leave room to talk about indicators with
mm-hmm.
everybody. This is really, really crucial in carrying this work forward. We need to know, how are we having an impact? How do we measure that impact in a relevant way so that our work is sustained,
mm-hmm.
that it is relevant, and that
mm-hmm.
it's going forward in a positive direction? So I want to open this up to the indicators discussion.
Right, and I think what makes the most sense to me is let's look at indicators at the community level, because that seems to be the place where, you know, we can really benefit from hearing different folks. And so I think I want to move ahead a couple slides. And I'm going to skip through these. These are available for you online, so that's really focused on schools. Let's keep going to the community-level indicators. So we had a brainstorm here at Prevention Institute and thought about, you know, what kind of indicators at the community level might we measure?
So these are some of the examples that we came up with here at Prevention Institute. In the community, we can get we can see that there are increased feelings of hope and opportunity, which can be gathered through surveys and other forms of research. We can see improved perceptions of safety, community safety, reduced sexually suggestive advertisements, marketing in our community.
Right. And you think about, and we talked about this in the text chat, girls and women in local government or other leadership roles.
Mm-hmm.
Think about institutionalizing these kind of roles for young women within organizations
mm-hmm.
as well. And so what I think would be great is to hear from you all just some suggestions. You know, what are some indicators that measure progress countering these roles for limited, the limited roles for girls in community? What are you measuring? What do you think would be great to measure?
So equal pay.
Equal pay. This is huge. We still have a long way to go on that one.
The actual opportunities would be communicators. Oh, the actual opportunities that exist in community
mm-hmm.
would be the communicators. Very good point, Brad.
And Kathy brought up Prop 8 and declaring that the gay marriage ban was unconstitutional, that it didn't necessitate a constitutional amendment, and that'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Reduction in gendered bullying incidents.
Increased comfort with schools at the community level with variation in gender expression and gender identity. That would be very interesting to measure, Amy. I love it. Laura has a great one. More women enrolled in traditionally male majors and classes. And you talk about needing some policy and providers really, you know, training that one.
We have less teen pregnancy and planned pregnancies.
Increased safety. We've also looked at this issue, if you're interested, as a something connected to chronic disease. I don't know if you guys heard NPR, Christine, yesterday morning did a story on Centers for Disease Control came out and said, look, chronic obesity can't be blamed on the individuals. It's about the community.
Mm-hmm.
And unless we take safety into account, then we can't really think about this issue. And I thought about that with the lens for violence against women and for girls' safety,
mm-hmm.
that they talk about it being a barrier for them to play sports
mm-hmm.
And just participate in the community. So that might be an interesting indicator as well. Great. Oh, and girls feeling confident to pursue broader career choices.
Great.
Okay. Megan, I know, I get lost in that. Do you have any indicators that you would be willing to share, kind of that might be helpful for people when they're thinking about hearty environments?
Yeah, absolutely. We measure the impact of our girls' groups as our middle school program in how well it helps girls critically analyze gender stereotypes, how well it creates an active coalition of girls within a school, whether it provides activities and facilitation for group discussion and group action, and whether it supplies girls with a foundation for social change. So some of our outcomes have been that girls who participate in these groups report better self-knowledge and increased perspective taking, which helps to counteract that disconnection girls feel when they reach adolescence from themselves and from what they know and their loss of voice. Girls, we measure girls having a heightened cultural critique, more positive feelings about themselves, the ability to break down stereotypes about themselves and other girls, improved conflict negotiation and relational skills, which is really important both in interpersonally within schools but also within families. Girls learn the importance of being allies to other girls. Girls have a more positive relationship with their family members. And then girls report that the girls' groups are safe spaces for themselves and for other girls.
And that's the other thing is, you know, do you have a safe space? And thinking about that as a community indicator as well, right? That's wonderful. Kayla's comment here about corporate boards, Christine and I were looking at Forbes magazine.
It was the top 20
executives under 40.
Under 40.
Right? We were looking for ethnicity to make sure that they had a diverse group, and then we realized there was no women. No women. And we were like, well, this isn't like the most richest people where it's a lifetime of accumulation. This is, you know, the new executives, and they were all men.
The young future of tomorrow.
And it's just a subjective, you know, thing that Forbes did, and it just said, you know, we have a lot of work to do. So, I always appreciate Prevent Connect because we can come together, and I think about, you know, at some level, this is our circle, right, where we can come together, talk about these issues, you know, get better articulated about topics, get excited, and
share resources,
thank you. And I always appreciate the opportunity to come together. I hope for those of you that have joined us for the first time, you'll be joining us again. And I really want to thank our guests, Megan and Corey, for really expanding our vision of what's possible and, you know, being a resource for the community. So, Megan and Corey, thank you so much.
For sure.
Great. All right, David, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Well, great. Well, I want to thank all of you for being able to participate and joining us in today's conversation. And once again, our conversations are beginnings of topics, and that we continue doing this, and it's a way to be able to move forward. Elsa, that's great to be able to see your first time here, and I see that about half of you were the first time here, that we're trying to be able to find a way to have a discussion, and this is one form of our discussion. We have other forums. You can tweet about this.
Mm-hmm.
I had someone asking me about a hashtag for this conversation in a private chat. We can have this on the listserv and go to preventconnect.org. We do have a survey that should be emailed, that if all technology right, it works right, it will be coming to you in the next few minutes. You'll get an evaluation, and it's a great way for us to be able to explore. So once again, I want to really thank Corey for coming, and Megan for joining us, and I really, really thank the team from Prevention Institute, Christine and Annie, and all the others who are helping here behind the scenes, and over at Prevention Institute, also Chad at CalCasa, and this is a great opportunity for us to be able to think about how we'll move forward. So soon we'll be opening up registration for our next web conference about Under Control. There'll be more events that are happening. I hope to see, for those of you who are coming to the National Sexual Assault Conference, it'll be a great opportunity. I know Annie is going to be presenting.
Stop by and say hi, guys.
And I know that several, Brad Perry is in the audience here, will also be presenting, and that we've got a few others of you who will be there. So I stop by and let's say hi. Maybe we'll try to come up Prevent Connect little badges so people can put them on and know that who's Prevent Connect members. That'd be great. So let's, we'll talk to you all later. So this, I'll keep the text chat open for a few minutes. We'll post the text chat on our website next week. So thank you all, and that is the end of our audio portion.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude today's presentation. Thank you so much for your attendance. Have a great day.